Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a very cheery episode of the Red and White Chalkboard Podcast with myself, Cormac, and my slightly unwell co-host, Taylor. Taylor, how are we doing?
Minus a dodgy baklao fritter from a backyard Bilbao calf. I'm doing actually pretty okay. It's nice to be in the land of warm fish food where I'm not at the risk of food poisoning because I have been sedated on the sofa, which is why we didn't get an episode out to because I was infirmed on the sofa, unable to really present myself to my partner, let alone the world. So here we are on slightly later than we wanted to be on the Tuesday evening to discuss all the, well, half amazing, half okay games of football that happened last week and on the weekend. And how are you, Cormac?
Yeah, I'm all right, man. Just getting on the back of Bank Holiday weekend, which has been lovely. Yeah. Sun's been out for most of it other than yesterday. But first, I am, however, a little bit upset because Arsenal did lose 1-0 to PSG.
Man. Talk me through your thoughts, what happened in the game, and just, yeah, tell me about it.
I mean, this isn't exactly breaking news, but PSG are a very good football team. And they looked, that first 20 minutes especially, they dominated us. Their midfield, I think, of Vitinha, Ruiz, and who's the other one I'm blanking on?
João Neves,
of course, are just so electric. Like, they genuinely, they look like kind of the old, like, Barcelona midfield. I mean, that's kind of, you know.
That was scary.
Yeah, but they were just so good. The balls they were playing, the runs they were making, the space they were creating. Marino really struggled, I think, in that midfield role. And then that didn't allow Rice to really dominate. But I think the midfield was where it was won and lost. The first goal was really, really nicely worked. I watched like this breakdown of it, and you see, like, I think it is Ruiz that kind of runs across, creates the space down the middle, and then eventually cuts back in, leaving Carrascalia on his own, and then just able to cut it back to Dembele, finish away. They had a few other chances kind of in the second half as well, hit the bar. I can't remember who it was. Someone just played it wide of the goal as well.
Mm-hmm. I know. I remember Barcola had a chance at the end in the which he didn't manage. Just cut across the post, but
that was the first one,
boy, that PSG team, I 100% agree. There's something else. And Donnarumma obviously managed to have an all-timer.
He did. Again. Well, that's to say, what Donnarumma are you going to get? You're going to get an all-timer Donnarumma performance. You're going to get the absolute bozo gene Donnarumma. Unfortunately, we got the all-timer one.
That scar he got a couple of weeks ago. He got a dreadful injury in a league one game.
Kicked in the head, didn't he?
He got kicked in the head. He had to have surgery. And he just looks like so terrifying.
He is. He's a scary-looking man. And he's Italian. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that save, I think especially for the Trossard chance, was a really nice save. Just got down quick. I do think, like I said, they were better. Reflecting back, that yellow card Partey got just looks dumber and dumber. Because I think if Partey is there, very much, I think the space Dembele occupied when he had a shot, which was a really nice finish as well, that's where Partey would be sitting in that kind of place.
Yeah, obviously you could all speculate saying he would have got it. I just think it was such a precise finish.
It was a lovely finish. Yeah,
and third 3 minutes in,
got a bit lucky as well. Obviously.
Killed the mood, sadly. I think didn't it?
Completely stung the crowd immediately.
Yeah,
it was the worst possible start, but it was a really nice goal. And I think, like I said, the first 20 minutes especially, they did dominate. Second half was a bit flat. We had moments. They came from predominantly. I think Rice looked very much comfortable there still.
Best player, I thought.
He was definitely our best player. Saliba had a good game as well, and Miles Urskelly again.
Yeah.
Both him and Rice had moments. The two chances that were created were them running through the middle and playing the ball through. But again, just good saves met. We do just kind of lack, we did lack, again, it's kind of been the same as it has been all season, but it was very vocal there and then. That creativity in the final third and that vocal point.
Mm-hmm.
We've spoken about it and it's been a hot topic online, but Odegaard, again, really struggled.
Like he has no confidence now.
He's just
really frustrating.
It's really frustrating. We've said it before. That is the word to describe it. It is just frustrating. Sorry. But he just doesn't play the ball fast enough and some of the passes have been off. He looks knackered. I think he looks a bit drained.
Mm-hmm. His whole play is lethargic, isn't it?
It is. It's been a rough season for him. I think it is maybe on the back of the injury and just the inconsistency that we've had in the final third that has just completely knocked his confidence, it seems. But yeah, he's just tap, 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 walk around, pass, you know, pass sideways.
Swiveling permanently, trying to find the perfect pass. And bro won't shoot. No. Just have a shot.
I know. What's the worst that's going to happen? You're going to miss. That's fine. I'm going to have shots anyway.
It's better than not taking the shot, swivel, 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 and lose the ball or to pass it into nothing. So.
I think Saka had a few moments where he looked like he was going to be create something. He just wasn't, unfortunately, able to. But yeah, definitely the best team won on the night. Frustrating because it was at home. But 1-0 isn't the end.
No. Trust me, it could have been a lot worse.
It could have been a lot worse.
And the fact that I think you guys walked away with that 1-0 is good hope. Mm-hmm. It just, how scary was it every time PSG lost possession or you guys had possession, how quickly they all ran back into ultimate like perfect shape to close off all the passing angles. That is such a well-coached team.
Yeah, it was.
It was scary. Watching it on the telly, you could just see just amazingly how they were all in the right place at the right time. And the minute someone got the ball, they all knew how to attack as one unison.
Yeah, that's it.
Watching the team I watch all the time and then watching a team like PSG just work like, you know, a majestic swan almost in unison. It was beautiful to watch.
Like, I think that was the difference. Arsenal are a very, very, very well good coached team.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But PSG are an excellently coached team. Kind of front to back. Where Arsenal, I think defensively, were just as good, if not better than PSG. But that midfield and front line are just that much better, I think, and just that much more dynamic, and just they can all do it, whereas we have clear weaknesses still.
You know, my theory is on PSG, they've done the Liverpool syndrome, which is they've brought players in that bracket between like 30 mil to like 60 mil really well.
Mm-hmm.
I think Kvaratskhelia was about 60 million. I'm not sure how much Fabian Ruiz was, but I know that Vitinha was probably in that bracket of 40 million.
Yeah.
Usain Dembele, I think, was about 50 million, which
is still considering
now
100
looking
million
it's
player,
an absolute bargain. Désiré Doué, about 30 million. They've gone for that. It's, obviously, we know that they've reshaped their transfer strategy. They've gone younger, they've gone hungrier, they've gone more French based talent, but they've also shopped within that bracket of not overpaying and kids who have something to prove. I think Jean Neves was a bit more. I think he was more like 80 million. But then also you can totally vindicate why they've spent 80 million.
It was worth it, wasn't it? Like, you can tell he's just that good.
Also, bro looks majestic. He looks like someone out of like the 80s.
They're all kind of handsome.
Yeah, it's kind of annoying as well.
It's not fair there.
Yeah. And that was just...
I think an interesting stat which kind of really shows the level of the game. I think possession was pretty even. I think overall, I think PSG maybe had 53% or something like that. It was quite close. But I think Arsenal played kind of the mid 300 passes, kind of like 375 or something like that. PSG were in the 400s.
Mm.
And it just that many more passes because of the kind of the diagonal passes they were able to play to break lines and get through that midfield were just notably that much slicker, quicker. Just able to get them away. But yeah, the better team definitely won.
100%. And I think what's most important Arsenal didn't do in the first leg and 100% should do in the second leg is take advantage of that Marquinhos, Donnarumma, potential Bozo partnership that
they have.
Because that's been their downfall the last few years. And
they are gettable.
They are gettable.
Which does lead me into talking about the next leg now. I am not unconfident, which is a bit cryptic maybe, but I'm not.
What does that mean?
I don't know, Taylor, I'll be honest with you. Basically, I do think we can still get them. Especially like set pieces. Obviously, we didn't even mention Marino had an offside goal, quite clearly offside.
Really frustrating offside.
Yeah,
you do this thing where everyone starts offside and then runs almost onside, but not quite onside.
I know, and then like we block the players, and then the guy who's meant to head it is meant to come from an onside position. Yeah. But I think is in European competitions with the European refs, you're touching a defender in the box, they're going to blow. Oh, the ref was shit, actually, by the way.
Yes.
Another quick thing.
Yeah, the ref was...
He was just blowing for everything. That first Trossard yellow card stunk, because then that really set the tone very early on. And I don't know how many times PSG... Again, I can't remember now the players, but they got away really lucky with certain situations, which was really frustrating to watch. He did not have a great game.
I can't imagine it's going to get better even for the second
half. No, now going into Paris.
The crowd of the PSG fans behind the team, behind the ref. So it's going to be incredibly tough. But you have got Thomas Partey back, which I can't believe 2025 Arsenal's really desperately need Thomas Partey.
He's just been that good for us.
But he's had a very good season for you guys, and the system very much depends on him being there.
Because that allows Rice to go forward.
And it allows
Mourinho
to not be in the middle.
God, if you told me at the beginning of the season we were relying on Mikel Mourinho starting up top, and we want that going into a second leg of a semi-final.
I hope you guys have a really good transfer window and don't let Mikel Arteta buy really boring, technically fine Spanish players.
I think that's exactly what's going to happen.
I think that's exactly what's going to happen, because you've gone from a somewhat exciting football team to just a
pretty
bit
dull, relying on set pieces.
Massive giants.
Yeah, a bunch of 6'3" giants.
Solid.
That's it.
So, okay. So, on that note, is there anything else you want to mention about the game on Wednesday night? Or
Well, Dembele is going to be fit, I'm saying. Yeah. He did go off with a little bit of a limp. We've got Calafiori back, who's also like another third choice striker for us, I think, at times. Because he looks like one of our most comfortable players in the other box, but one of the least comfortable in our box. I do feel confident that we can get something. It's going to be unbelievably difficult. We need an all-timer from Rice. We need an all-timer from Saka. We need Odegaard to pull that finger out of his arse. And I think it's going to be really important for Martinelli as well to be running those full-backs up and down and really trying to push them back defensively.
They're so good at the wing-backs
They are. But they are, again, they are gettable because they play so high up.
Yeah, it's true.
So I need Martinelli and Saka, Rice, the entire team, really. It's going to be tough. It is going to be tough. But I am going to make a prediction now.
Please do.
I think Arsenal win in the 1-0, goes to extra time. Mm-hmm. Arsenal do them on penalties.
What? You know what? That's so funny, because I was going to go for 2-1 Arsenal in the 90. Extra time, and PSG are going to win on penalties.
Oh, that would kill it.
I know. Penalties would be awful. Absolutely awful.
Because I actually want to touch on that before we move on to the other Champions League fixture happening tonight. If you are to go out on Wednesday evening, where does that leave the project? Where does that leave the season? Where does that leave the vibes? Because you see a lot of Arsenal fans talking online about how maybe the direction is, if you were to go out tomorrow night, maybe it's not in the direction everyone's wanting to, or is that just people talking nonsense?
Right, let's get this straight. Arsenal fans are idiots. Twitter Arsenal fans are double idiots, which is the most polite thing I could probably say about them. It's been a down year. Objectively, we've had a bad year, but that is fine. Like, it's not fine, but it does happen sometimes.
This bad year as well, bear in mind, would have been your best year 5 years ago.
Exactly.
In a long time.
And like, you can point at the injuries. Like, it's not an excuse, but it is a reason. There's a word I'm missing here.
It goes to show that you desperately need a really strong transfer season period where you really bulk the squad out with really high quality players, buy a couple of really important starters, but also make sure you buy a couple of caliber players like a Trossard who can come in and make these differences when you have a couple of injuries that can be away.
Exactly.
Because the squad's looking a bit thin now.
Like, we've got depth in the back, we've got nothing up top. Yeah. And it has been a down year. We haven't spent much. The transfer policy's been poor. We've been unlucky with injuries. And that has kind of led to where we are now, which is obviously a bad year, bad result. But I have no doubt that we are going to be back next year. Mm-hmm. We still have been one of the best teams in the league. And getting to a semi-final of Champions League, I mean, it's not great if we finish, could be finished third or fourth even. But I think talk of Arteta leaving or anything like that is so stupid. Because who do you bring in and look at what
exactly
he's done? So, like, I don't know, look at Man United.
That's exactly what I thought you'd say.
Yeah,
so
it's so ridiculous. But, yeah. Still need a result, please.
Desperately, boys. Desperately.
But yeah, should we touch on the other game then?
Which was the game
of the week, really, I think, wasn't it?
3-3,
Barcelona into Milan. And I don't know what you think, where you want to start with this, but for me, the talk of the town, Lamine Yamal.
The second best winger in the world, and I'll come to the best winger when we get to Manchester United.
Wonder who that could
Athletic
be.
Bilbao. But yeah, that was a crazy game. And what... For a 17-year-old to...
17 years old.
You know, I was having this argument the other day because someone thought that he wasn't 17. I was like, no, he is 17 for a good few more months. To be doing this... The goal was awesome.
Unbelievable.
To be doing that on the stage that he's doing it on in Champions League semi-final. He did it against France in the Euro semis.
Mm-hmm.
He had a great game against England in the final as well. Every...
That was when he was 16.
And that's when he was 16. He's had a great season for Bart. He's 17. You can't even caveat. This would be a season where if they were 24, that'd be crazy.
People would still be talking about best player in the world, which they are obviously now.
100%.
But he's got to be in the conversation,
hasn't
he? His
stats at such a young age, his quality, I don't even think it's worth even looking at the stats. Just watching him play the beautiful game.
I'm just reminding myself he scored, because I can't remember the top of my head. But yeah, your best mate, Ferran Torres, got goals.
Yeah, he's in the form of his life, which is really bad news for me and how much I hate him. But yeah, just to see him play the beautiful game, he does it so well. I can't believe they've spawned this guy out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. They've got him, they've got Pau Kubasi at the back as well, who just seems to be such a good defender. And
he looks classy, doesn't he, really, already?
Just for this Barcelona team, who looked in just a mere two seasons ago in such despair, to now have Lamine Yamal on the right, Rafinha on the left-hand side, who are just both two wingers in
two of the best players in, the best players in the world, arguably. Yeah, they were looked electric. However, it was still 3-3.
Denzel Dumfries, by the way.
Dumfries, two goals.
Yeah.
Crazy. Every time I watch him, I swear he's either the best player on the pitch or the worst player on the 100%. Pitch.
100%. Literally about to say the exact same.
It's bizarre. He scored two really nice goals as well.
Really,
I mean, Thuram as well, first goal as well, which was a lovely little
cheeky backheel.
In the first minute, yeah.
Beautiful goal.
Scored a backheel, which was unbelievable. And Dumfries got the assist as well. So he got two goals and an assist. So not bad going either. But yeah,
just sets this tie up tonight beautifully, doesn't
it? Yeah,
anything can happen.
By the time this is out and you guys listen to it, you will know the result.
So we're not going to spiel too much on it, just on the basis that we don't want to get it so wrong and everyone listens and be like, who are these bozos?
That being said, we're about to drop some absolutely bang on predictions, which you guys are going to think we're lying about. Yeah. You go first with this one.
Okay, what I'm going to back my horse Inter Milan at home. I think they are going to just about do it. I don't know, because it's almost like I don't want to believe how good this Barcelona team are. They haven't got Balde at left back. They haven't really got much of a defence. They had this guy play at the weekend from Gerard Martin, who got took off in the 45th minute because he really struggled in their La Liga game. You know, they're fighting on all fronts. They've got the Copa del Rey, they've got La Liga, and they've got and they got the Champions League. So this team, whereas Inter Milan have slightly faded now in their Serie A title challenge, they're 3 points behind Napoli. They're really throwing all their eggs into this basket. They probably really think if they can get past Barca, they can probably do it in the final.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to back my horse. I'm going to go for 3-1 Inter.
Wow, that high scoring still. Yeah. Do you reckon there'll be three goals for Inter?
Yeah, I reckon.
I think favourites now are definitely, for this time, got to be Inter. Just because they are that strong, especially at home. But I want to be different and special. So I will say a Barcelona 2-1 win in this tie, making it 5-4.
Wow.
And then that's in the 90.
Yeah.
I'll say.
Okay.
But it's going to be...
Also, shout out Pedri, who might be my favourite centre mid in the world.
He's really good.
He's a special, special footballer as well. And they just have all these...
And Gabby as well is another one. They just...
So I think they've got Lautaro Martinez. I say it every time. I'm not sure if Lautaro Martinez is ever playing, but then he always seems to play. So I think he's back for this game.
Yeah.
If he is, count on him scoring, because he's just that guy.
Especially at the San Siro, yeah.
Yeah. So imagine the atmosphere is going to be crazy for this game. It's going to be a massive game. We're excited.
Yep.
So
very excited.
Wonderful.
Right. Moving on from the best European competition to the second best competition. However, maybe the best team left in this competition, and favourites probably to win it all now, are Manchester United. Taylor, do you want to start with... Let's talk about your trip first before we get onto the football.
Oh, gosh, what a trip. Very long day on the Thursday. There actually wasn't much to really talk about on the trip other than we got to the game and we were kind of in and around the area. The vibe compared to the Lyon away game was just so much more friendlier.
They are
the football, everyone was up for the game. Everyone was so hyped. We could freely walk around the stadium. We weren't being cordoned off or anything. You know, we were chatting.
I don't think I've ever seen more... I think Rio said this on... Rio Ferdinand. That's just Rio. That's what I just call him. Don't worry about it. I don't think I've ever seen more like home shirts in a stadium. Like, and the video, some videos you were sending me as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just everyone was in the...
Covered. Yeah, it was... It looked beautiful. Beautiful stadium. New stadium. Everyone in the surrounding areas. You know, we were hitting up some bars before the game. Everyone was super friendly. Everyone was really being nice to us, wishing for a good game. Your vibes were high.
Spanish love football, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And they're not too in your face about it as well, and as much as, you know, the English fans are. And So then that was it. We had a very long day getting to the stadium, getting off, you know, to our hotel and everything. But we managed it. It was in good time. And we got there and then we sat down, we took our seats and we were like, come on then, let's go. The stadium was up for it. The vibes were high. The noise was great. The atmosphere was great. It looked amazing. But boy, I just did not know what was going to come next. And it all started off with the actual best winger in the world, Lamine Maguire, receiving the ball out wide and just sending a...
Well, he was playing with the fullback at first and then the perfect cross in. Because you didn't know who played it across in the stadium, did you?
Well, so I could tell that Maguire... we'd had a few beers before. So obviously I remember the skill of Maguire chopping it past, sending some Basque lad back to the Basque land. Just bam, 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 sending him for a cheesecake, you know, just turns it in, puts the ball in. And then I'm going to speak as if I truly knew what happened. He whips in this absolutely delightful cross into Manuel Ugarte, who heads it on into who I thought was Patrick Dorgu at the time from where I was sitting in the stadium. Because I was saying to my friend who was at the game with, shout out, friend of the pod. I was like, Patrick, I said it on the podcast, Patrick Dorgu needed a big game. Here he is. He scored it. But no, it was Uncle Casemiro. They're diving into the back post to just set us up absolutely brilliantly for that first goal. Classic goal. Everyone in the away end was going nuts. This was the best away end of the season so far, by the way. This was, everyone was there chanting. You know, there's a beautiful chant about how United go into Bilbao, despite already being in Bilbao for the away game for the semis. The away end was just going absolutely berserk. And then by the time, you know, everything started to calm down, because Athletic in the first 10 minutes,
They looked good.
They looked on top of us. They looked quick on the break, fast on the break. You thought Neco Williams definitely had something over our right-hand side because he was playing off the left. And it looked like Athletic were definitely soaking up the initial pressure and were going to make something sooner rather than later. So that first goal really took their wind out of their sail, to which then we had, I can't remember who put the ball in. I want to say it was Garnacho who put the ball in, because Garnacho did score a goal.
He did score a goal.
But it was offside.
Yeah.
It was offside. And
because I said Garnacho goal as well, and I was going to be really tough on myself. Yeah.
So then, obviously, we scored the first goal from a beautiful Casemiro header, and then...
It was Ugarte again, was it?
Huh?
Was it Ugarte again?
For the assist? No, because it won't show you the assist for the penalty. Oh, sorry. So, unnamed player put the ball in across, and Rasmus Højlund is diving for his life to get the ball. And obviously, because we're quite far away in the stadium, we can't see everything perfectly. So I just see Rasmus Højlund miss the ball with essentially the plain open goal to hit. And I'm just going berserk, you know, hurling abuse. Why can't this guy score? And then all of a sudden I hear a bloke behind me shout, it's a penalty check. And I was like, for what? So I just assumed he'd missed. And then it turns out, no, that Vivian, who I'd actually called out before as being one of their better defensive players, he's massive, he's very good, he's had a very good season for Bilbao, had actually yanked him back with his hand.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say it was the most...
It was a clear-cut pen, was it?
But if you're doing that, and I think that's a very unrisky, unprofessional thing to do, because if you're doing it, you're asking the question. To which, obviously, the ref went to the monitor, had a quick glance, and then gave a penalty, but then to our surprise, produced the red card, which made the stadium, let me say, very upset.
Yeah.
The boos were coursing through my ears, listening to the response of the crowd to that. Because firstly, obviously, it has to be a red card because it's the denial of a clear goal scoring opportunity. It's just, I don't think they put into mitigation that with Rasmus Højlund on the end of it.
Yes. So it's definitely not a clear card.
Who's to say whether it's actually a clear cut opportunity or not? So then, penalty awarded, red card. All of a sudden, we're all going nuts because, like, is this actually happening? We've watched this team all season be so poor. And right now, in the biggest game of the season, where everyone was obviously hoping for a Manchester win, but no one really anticipated it. And now we had the opportunity to go 2-0 up in like the 35th minute. And it was like, and then obviously our man Bruno Fernandes steps up to take the
penalty.
Never
in doubt, that
what
really.
What a cool penalty that was, by the way.
Never in doubt.
Held his nerve till the very last minute. Bear in mind that Athletic have a Spain number one goalkeeper in Unai Simón. Although I'm not sure if he actually played that game. I'm not 100% sure if he did. But he's held his nerve till the very last minute, put it right in the corner. And the commentary that I listened to after on the BT game, which was like, he is telling everyone to calm down. It's me, guys. Of course, I'm never going to miss. Next thing you know, 2-0 up. We're all going absolutely crazy. I can't believe my luck. To which then, 45th minute, some nice interplay, you know, in the final third of the pitch. Agate again with his second assist again.
I thought as well, side note, I thought he was having a stinker the first 15 minutes or so.
He's really good at this at the minute and having a very dreadful game.
He just kept giving the ball away.
But he's adding goal contributions. Yeah. I don't know what I prefer. Agate where he's not doing anything, but he's stably monitoring the back line, or he's having stinkers losing the ball all the time, but he's giving an assist or a goal here or there. I don't know which I'm preferring, but he flicks this delightful through ball to Bruno Fernandes, who's all of a sudden one-on-one with the goalkeeper. Yeah. And it's one of these where I knew this was our moment. I knew he was going to miss. I had absolute sheer confidence in Bruno Fernandes delivering that third goal. Boom, right on the final whistle, like half-time whistle, 3-0. Absolutely incredible. You couldn't have paid me. Although I did predict 3-1 on the pot.
You did. So, yeah, but that was more blind confidence, I think, maybe than anything else.
So then all of a sudden we went into half-time with a 3-0 lead. And everyone was talking about the final in the away end. Everyone's just thinking about how they're getting to the final. And then obviously the second half played out. I thought we managed it incredibly well.
Yep. So
the most important thing I kept repeating in that second half was do not concede a goal.
Yeah.
If we could keep that clean sheet, that was so important for this home.
3-1 does make it a lot shakier, doesn't
yes,
it?
Yes, all of a sudden, as we'll talk with the Spurs game, 3-1 all of a sudden looks like a completely different game than 3-0.
Yep.
3-0 is such a strong scoreline where you're thinking now, unless you have a generational head loss on Thursday, which, I mean, if any team could do it, we're talking about my beautiful team, because they definitely could do it. But I'm not going to say that.
No.
I think they did so well in such a tough stadium. The reaction of the Athletic Club fans is that they felt incredibly hard done by the ref.
Which I understand to a point, because that red card did.
Also, Spanish really... teams love to complain about the ref. So
yeah, so do we though.
Yeah,
I just did it.
They really love to do it. Like they will bypass the fact that they lost 3-0. Two other goals, completely fine goals, and just claim on to the fact that they
the ref did one red card and killed the game.
They got someone sent off. So outside of that, I thought we played really well, managed to keep the clean sheet 3-0. Beautiful, absolutely delightful. Now we've got the home leg on Thursday. And before we go into the home leg, I just want to break some news on this podcast. And that although I was very excited to go to the final in the San Mamés in just 2 weeks' time, I will not be going because I woke up the very next day, or maybe the day after, to a very unwanted email from Manchester United saying that in the event that we do get to the final, we are running a ballot this week as we speak now, to fans who are eligible for the final, and they listed the criteria for fans who are eligible for the final, just to find out that the person who has attended every single European away day for the past 3 seasons, who has amassed 10 credits or 11 credits now post Athletic Bilbao, and I'm in the top percentile of European away credits for the entire fan base, I'm not eligible because I do not own a season ticket, therefore I will not be getting a ticket for the final, which I think is absolutely disgraceful on the club. And I cannot believe that now I'm in a situation where I should have been getting a ticket. I've been at every single game, campaign, every group stage game. The only game I wasn't able to go to was Pleasant because there was an allocation of 600 tickets. So I wasn't able to get one. But outside of that, I've spent so much time, so much money, thousands of pounds, endless hours getting to very difficult places in very short notice to go watch the team on this campaign in Europe. And as a result, I cannot go. So I will not be going to the final one.
That is so shit, man. So shit.
And that's how they reward it. They're giving priority to season ticket holders who have been to at least one Euro game in the past 3 years. And then outside of that, if you are a platinum member, and there's even some criteria where you don't even have to have a European away credit. There's so much criteria which allows you to apply. That's only if you pay a lot of money to have a season ticket. I don't have a season ticket because first, I don't live in Manchester. That's why I go partly to the European away games. And secondly, because I'm in the queue for a season ticket, but I'm 100,000th in the queue.
You need about 80,000 people to die.
There's no hope for me in that respect. If I could have had a season ticket, maybe I would have had a season ticket a long time ago and just go whenever I could get myself up there.
Yeah.
But I don't. That's why I go to Euro away days. And I've spent so much time and effort. And as a result, my loyalty is rewarded with approximately nothing.
Yeah.
So that is
wonderful. Shit. It's
so
a real
I'm taking a stand, and I am making a point in that I will not be going to the final out of pure disgrace for the system, because I find that repulsive way to treat someone who has spent all that time, money, and effort to watch the team during, let's say, frankly, a shocking campaign.
One of the worst, in fact. Yeah.
So what I thought was going to be a great way to end the campaign, going to a final, is now come to a very abrupt end, and that will be the final away game I will be going to watch Manchester United, which stinks a bit, doesn't it? So
that's what a way to go out.
Yeah. So sorry to end on that horrible note, but let's move on. It's very important to talk about these things because fans are often screwed over in all sorts of different ways, be that ticket prices, be that fixture changes to late night games where there's no way to get home after an away game. There's so many ways that the system screws over a football fan, but it's even worse when your own club is actively doing it. Instead of giving it extra thought to be like, okay, how about anyone who's got amassed 7 credits or anyone who's amassed 6 or more credits this season during this campaign, who's been to 7 or more games this campaign, they're also eligible. That would be such a simple thing. There's an allocation of 15,000 tickets. So they obviously have given it no thought into thinking, well, there's obviously going to be people who have been to all these games who aren't season ticket holders. How about we think about them? No, they gave it no thought. It just went for, essentially, I believe it is the criteria that it was for, well, I think it's the criteria that it is for FA Cup finals. I think it's the criteria that it was when we played in the Europa League final in Stockholm a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think they've just not given it any extra thought, which again is such a shame, and that's completely thrown me off. It's completely put me off, which is horrible, but it's important to talk about.
Yeah. Well, you've kept it really cool. Yeah. And you're clearly not that bothered by it, so it's all right at the end of the day. No, it does stink, though. It does really stink. Yeah. But that aside, great 3-0 win.
Huge. Huge for the boys, and it sets us up really nicely. And let's talk about this home game because...
Yeah, go on. Quick predictions. What do you reckon?
Quick predictions. I think we're going to do them, of course. I think we're going to get... I'm going to say 2-1.
I was actually going to say 2-1 as well. I'm going to say 2-1 Bilbao.
Okay.
Athletic, should I say. Yeah. Just make things a little bit interesting, a little bit spicy. Okay. Onana stinker, double.
Yeah, but also I watched Bayern Deer at the weekend. And
yeah.
All of a sudden I have utmost faith in Onana.
And he might be the best keeper in the league.
Yep, might be.
And then we can quickly touch on as well the other Europa League game. Spurs, 3-1 final score against Bodo. I've only watched very brief highlights of this one, to be completely honest with you.
All I know is that I'm pretty sure Bodo scored a very late goal to make it interesting. I think they were 3-0 up.
They were, yeah.
And now that does make it someone... Bodo Glimt did not have two of their best players. And also, let it be said that James Maddison is out for the rest of the season.
Yep.
Who's to say it's going to be a difficult scenario? I don't think it's going to be a hostile atmosphere for Tottenham to face. But
the Norwegians are nice.
But if for whatever reason Bodo Glimt get an early goal, things could be...
Yeah, that extra goal.
But it's looking like it's probably going to be a Manchester United-Tottenham final, which does kind of stink, but...
Well, it makes things interesting for the top four, doesn't it, I think? Well, for the Champions League race, even. Yeah. I mean, it just shows... Because it could be 15th and 16th playing a Europa League final in the English League, which is
horrific.
It's not great, is it? Really? No. It's a bit dull. Yeah, I mean, Chelsea won again. Who cares?
Chelsea won. Who cares? I think it sets them up nicely now. It looks like Nottingham Forest are falling out of that.
Yeah. So, Chelsea won your Conference League.
Oh, Chelsea won the Conference.
And also, moved on. We haven't done predictions for the Bodo Glimt and Spurs.
I'm going to go 2-0 Bodo Glimt and Bodo Glimt to win on penalties.
I'm going to go 2-0 Spurs in the 90. Just easy.
Makes sense.
To do it.
It makes sense.
Boring, but yeah,
It's definitely the least palatable out of all the ties that remains in Europe outside of the Conference League, which I hold steadily against. Although, let it be said that Antony could be receiving a Europa League and a Conference League medal if...
See his goal on the weekend, by the way.
See his goal. Antony is doing a fantastic job upping that value.
I wonder how Betis fans feel. Because
they love him.
Well, that's what I mean. But do they think... It could be one of two things. Do they think, oh my God, the Premier League is obviously so good and so difficult that this player couldn't make it there? Or do they think, what the fuck? How can Man United not have this player working? Because it's got to be one of those two, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got to be one of those two. I genuinely just believe that they've got a player from a top team who hasn't been able to do it for a top team, and he's obviously dropped down a level, and he's managed to do
it. It's a great club, Betis, though, aren't they?
Good club. Obviously from Sevilla, so, you know, good on them. Really hope that they get to the final. Believe they beat Fiorentina 2-1.
Yep.
So it's the Antony versus David De Gea derby on Thursday evening as well to decide who really gets to the final. And then let's just hope it's Betis and then they play Chelsea in the final, and Anthony scored the winner.
Clubs like Chelsea shouldn't be in the Conference League. The Conference League isn't for Chelsea statures. But
no, but also if they aren't to win it for whatever reason in the final, that would be ultimately hilarious.
And that's, so all, and that's all we can hope for.
Yeah,
is Chelsea completely cocking up. But yes, also going on the back of that, do we want to touch on Trent first, or should we touch on the Champions League race, top four, top five race even?
We'll touch on Champions League race first, and then we'll end on the bigger news of the week.
Which is not exactly the most shocking, but we'll touch on it anyway. So Nottingham Forest, unfortunately, did draw last night against Crystal Palace 1-1, which has now put them into sixth. 1 point clear, or 1 point behind fifth, and I'm just putting up the table now. Yeah, so Chelsea in fifth. They are 2 points, sorry. Chelsea in fifth on 63. Newcastle in fourth on 63. City on third on 64. And Arsenal in second on 67.
You can't finish behind City.
You can't.
After the season that they've had.
I know.
And the abuse that they've gotten.
They're getting relegated.
Arsenal fans. Oh, it's true. But as the table will stand in the
I know, that,
the,
it will stink.
Time. It will stink if the abuse that Arsenal fans are giving City fans. I mean, I don't know how many of them are, like they have, but out of the three that might have seen the abuse,
it would be devastating
for Arsenal if you do finish third.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's all going to make a bit more sense after the next game week, I believe. They're all kind of still playing each other, and it's all going to become a bit more clearer. Ultimately, the teams I wanted to get, I don't mind Newcastle.
Yeah,
knowing Newcastle. The City have got it. Chelsea, I really don't want to get.
I really hope Forest can do it, because again, they've really fallen off. They drew that last night. They lost the game before. They won the game before that at Spurs, and they lost two before that. Mm-hmm. So they've really dropped off right at the end.
Yeah,
Villa are right there as well, 1 point behind Forest in seventh, that is. I think that's probably might be a little bit much for them to catch up. But yeah.
It's kind of almost looking like it's set now.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be very surprised.
That top five looks pretty locked in, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think
really?
That Chelsea victory over Liverpool is really going to...
Yeah, I mean, Liverpool are on the beach, aren't they?
That's the thing. It's going to give them the confidence to... For a young team like that, I think it'll give them the confidence to secure that bag.
Mm-hmm. So looking at the fixtures this weekend then. Who are the top four? City playing Southampton at Southampton, but that should be easy enough. So who cares about that?
How do they do it, man?
I know. Bournemouth are playing Villa, which is quite an interesting game, because obviously 8th place is going to be Conference.
If Villa don't win against Bournemouth, then that's, you know, if they lose for whatever reason, then that's them out.
That's it. Yeah. And then big games, a lot of games actually on Sunday. Newcastle playing Chelsea.
That's huge.
Which is going to be mad. That's a 12 o'clock kickoff on Sunday.
Is it?
Is that to stop the Geordies coming down really pissed, I'm guessing?
Well, and that's home for Newcastle.
Oh, stop the Chelsea fans going up really pissed, maybe. Yeah, I don't know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then you're looking at relegation fight, United West Ham.
Well, for whatever reason, if Chelsea do lose to Newcastle, which I think is definitely a possibility, and you'd expect Forest to pick up the victory against Leicester,
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden Chelsea are looking in a bit more of a...
Yeah, so that's actually a huge game on Sunday. Yeah. 12 o'clock, that's going to be the rest of the game of the weekend.
For whatever reason, if you'd expect Manchester City to beat Southampton. If Arsenal don't beat Liverpool,
which is very plausible,
it could Liverpool at home as well, who are going to be celebrating.
Yeah,
all of a sudden you're a level on points.
I think a lot of that depends on how the game on Tuesday goes, right? Oh, Wednesday 100%. Even. Sorry.
Well, I think either way, because if you lose and you're out, then morale is going to be devastated.
Mm-hmm. And the season's over, isn't it?
Yeah, and then all you. You win and you're through, and the preparations are 100% on the final.
Yeah,
because
so
you're
going to
know off after tonight who you've got.
I would much rather lose on Sunday, having won on Wednesday. So
otherwise, it could be a really cruel end of the week.
It could be really
the season
a bit of a wet fart of a finish.
So on that note, should we touch on the bigger news of the week?
Yeah, so it was announced yesterday, I believe, which is Monday. Trent is leaving them before the end of the season. Breaking news. Who saw that coming? Everyone. And he is going to sign for Real Madrid. The main thing I really want to talk about is the backlash he has been getting is brutal.
Mm-hmm.
He has been getting so much shit.
Mm-hmm.
Getting a really rough time. I mean, Twitter's not, again, we say it all the time, but it's not a clear, it's not your average fan on Twitter, is it? Bitching and sending hate. But even what I have seen elsewhere, and kind of, I saw as a hot water comedy club, which is a very famous comedy club in Liverpool, tweeted out today that Trent's been banned from the comedy club.
He's also been banned from Pop World.
I did see that as well.
So it's really bad time to be Trent in Liverpool now, because you can't go anywhere.
I know. Do you think this hate, not hate, but do you think the reaction is valid?
No, because there's such a difference emotionally and mentally being a football fan of a club to being a professional working person of a club. He has been there for 20 years, which I don't quite agree with because we're not going to count it since he was six. but he's been there for a long time. He's obviously won everything he wanted to win. He's lived that dream.
He's leaving on winning a title.
Yeah, and if he signed a new contract, the train to take him to Madrid, which essentially is the pinnacle of football.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter what club you're at. Madrid is always ahead of you.
Yeah, that is a one-stop train. It's not coming again in his career. He'll now sign a five-year contract. It'll take him through to when he's 31, 32.
Yeah, he's 26, 27 now, isn't he? If he's ever going to go, now is the time.
Yeah, and it could, you know, he said he wanted to win the Ballon d'Or. Good luck, mate.
Yeah, come on.
But if you are going to be able to put yourself in the top 10 position...
I mean, that could bite me in the arse, couldn't it? If he goes on and wins it next year.
But, you know, this is a one chance for him. Madrid will very much be doing the hard sell on. It's now or never. You signed this contract with Liverpool. We ain't ever speaking to you again.
Big money bonus.
I doubt it would be. You know, I don't think Real Madrid sign these. I think there'll be a nice sign-on fee.
That's what they do. That's what they do. That's what I mean.
But I don't think they'll be breaking. I saw something. He'll be getting paid around £150,000 a week.
No, that's what I mean. Sorry, he's good. The signing bonus.
The signing bonus is going to be very nice for him. Obviously, it's not nice to see a player leave, especially for free. I think that's
the main frustration. It seems. I don't know if they're using that as an excuse more than they actually are frustrated about that. Because if he still leaves the Real Madrid, they're still going to be annoyed. Even if if he goes for 70, 80 million, I don't know.
Yeah.
But then they're tagging along the free thing and claiming that as a thing. I do want to mention quickly, though, as well, Jamie Carragher saying last night, I do like Jamie Carragher as a pundit. I think he's very entertaining and he's very knowledgeable about football. But I know, maybe you disagree. But
he's okay.
Him saying, I don't like how people are telling Liverpool fans how to feel. You tell people fans on the field all the time.
Yeah, what told Casemiro to leave the football before the football leaves you.
Odegaard was taking a photo with the photographer and he told him to get down the tunnel.
Yeah, exactly.
So little things like that,
that's the problem. The world he exists in, he gets paid to essentially tell people what to think and do. So for him to then come out and say that is just so contradictory.
That's not even right.
Yeah.
I don't think.
Boom.
Yeah. Football fans, we're all hypocrites.
We're all fickle. We're all hypocrites. Yeah. And time will come. Time will pass. And all I'm saying is it's going to be really funny when Liverpool do have to play Real Madrid in Champions League and he plays. Very interesting side note in that it came out today that Real Madrid are trying to negotiate with Liverpool about signing him before the Club World Cup. And now all of a sudden they're like, well, just take whatever fee you can. You're not going to get 20 mil for him.
No, well,
you're going to get maybe a mil.
Allegedly, they're offering 850,000, which I think is hilarious.
Hilarious. I'd rather not have anything.
Such a fuck you.
Trying
to big boy them? They're trying to big dog them?
Well, that's what the big boys do, isn't it? It's like, know your place in this world.
Yeah, I mean, Liverpool, they could never accept that, and they shouldn't accept it.
They should make him play.
They will be milking that Trent contract.
Be playing at the Club World Cup for Liverpool, I have no doubt. Mm-hmm. If he isn't, it's only because he's simply refusing to. Maybe he has an injury. Because imagine if he does play for them and he does get injured in the Club World Cup, it'd be devastating. And Real Madrid, there would probably be some weird legal case attached to it. So who knows? This Club World Cup is so weird and it just screams litigious disaster waiting for all these players who are out of contract who are being forced to play in the competition. Some will get injured, some will lose moves as a result, and then there'll be someone to blame, and it's all going to get very messy and complicated. But in the tune of Trent, it's just hilarious.
Really fine.
Yeah, it just shows that if a player has the opportunity to go to Real Madrid, it doesn't matter how much attachment they'll have to an area.
Yeah.
Funny enough, maybe he doesn't want to live in Liverpool, and maybe he doesn't want to live in Madrid.
Would you rather live?
No, it's a tough choice. I mean, you know.
Liverpool, great city.
Yeah, man. I do love hitting up Preston on the weekend, but the chance to live in Madrid for the next 4 or 5 years of
play for the biggest club in the world.
Yeah, experience something completely culturally different. I mean, it's going to be really funny when Madrid inevitably whistle him and he's like, all the Liverpool fans. Also, shout out Liverpool fans for being non-hypocritical at all and telling Zubimendi last season when he stayed at Real Sociedad because he wasn't ready to leave his boyhood club to forget about loyalty and to just get over it and come to the other side because the other side's greater. Shout out to those Liverpool fans because you've now eaten your words.
Once again.
And you've seen how if you're going to say something about someone not knowing anything about the culture of a localized area, then it will come to bite you on the backside with one of your better players, because this has been brewing for 2 years.
Yeah. Tell you what, can't wait to clip this up and get the amount of shite from Liverpool fans.
I'm
gonna
sorry,
love this.
Guys. Yeah.
I'm not. But just get over it. The man's got a job to do, and his job has taken him to Madrid. Fucking anyone would take that. And he's earning $150,000 a week.
Yeah, it's not a bad sell at all. He's won it all there. He's done what he needs to do. Mm-hmm. He should retire, you know, a hero, but he's obviously not going to.
Yeah. So it's like Steve McManaman is what I've seen, isn't it? Which is pretty brutal. Or Michael Owen.
And also, let it be said, the Liverpool fans seem to now forget Steve Gerrard putting in various transfer requests over the course of his career. It happens, guys. It, you know, these guys do. The only people who do stay around are Manchester United legends because we're massive.
Lindelof. But,
Lindelof, exactly. He's had 8 years to go somewhere else in the island. So I'm
give
sure Madrid have called him many times.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So other than that, I don't think there's much other grand football news. I'm sure there is loads to talk about, but we're conscious we want to get this pod out to you guys so you can listen to our preview before the Arsenal game, probably tonight by the time you're listening to this. So, and then we'll make sure we'll round back on the weekend when all the finals are decided and moods are going to be decided for the next few weeks. And, you know, if we're living in a world where Arsenal have been knocked out and somehow Manchester United capitulated, then you might not probably hear from us again. This might be the final episode. So, but we're not hoping for that. And we're hoping to bring you a stupendous episode on the weekend.
Absolutely.
About how both our teams are in European finals.
Oh, God, please. It's going to be, I'm going tomorrow night to the pub to watch it with a bunch of Arsenal fans. Oh, it's going to be awful.
Yeah.
It's going to be awful. It's going to be worse than that first or second Madrid game.
Mm-hmm.
But I am also very much looking forward to it.
Yeah.
At the moment. That will change, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for listening, guys. Like, share, subscribe. Check out all the links in the description. Watch clips. We do silly games and what have you on our YouTube Shorts and TikTok. It's an absolute pleasure. And we'll see you guys next week.